In my own family, when I call home, and this has been going on pretty much my entire life, when I call home, my father will immediately hand the telephone off to my mother. And he'll say something like, "Oh, mother will be so happy that you called." My mother then will talk to me perhaps for 20 minutes, even up to an hour. My father, I realize after a short time, has gotten off the extension. Interestingly, though, I've discovered over time that if I happen to call at a time that my mother isn't home or isn't available to talk on the phone, then my father will talk, and he may talk at great length. Many other people tell me, too, that they've learned to intentionally call at times that their mothers are not home so that they can get their fathers to talk to them. I've also discovered that getting my father on email is a way to communicate, and many other people have picked this up as well, that their fathers will open up and talk when the mother is not looking over their shoulder because they're on email. In other words, fathers, too, come to depend on the mother to be communication central, but when she's not there, they fulfill that role themselves. I've been told by students whose parents are divorced that when the father can no longer get the information from the mother, they call themselves to find out what's going on. In order to understand talk in the family, we have to first understand gender patterns in talk. The family, you might say, is the training ground in which we learn to inhabit, to express, to manipulate the patterns of talk that become our tools for getting things done throughout the rest of our lives. And those patterns are all associated with gender. In the next lecture, we'll see how these gender-related patterns of talk that we develop in our own families are played out, for good and for ill, when we talk to each other at work.
After listening to Lecture 9, a student posed this question to Professor Tannen. Doesn't the example you gave us conform to the traditional pattern of father as hunter and mother as family caretaker? Let's listen to the professor's response.
I see what you're saying, that in a way it seems like a very primitive, almost caveman scenario. The man's been out hunting, he brings home the beef, he's tired, and the mother is trying to make him happy and also involve him with the child so that he won't leave the family and he'll stay taken care of. I still resist that interpretation for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think that up until quite recently, children were not involved with their fathers in that way. That's part of our very modern idea that fathers should also be child-centered, and the idea that families in general are child-centered. And so you want to involve the father with the child. I think in the past, the child would have been fed in the kitchen and kept away from the father when he came home so that he wouldn't be bothered. Nonetheless, it is interesting to us, and this is a finding that Cherry Kendall has really focused on, in looking at these tape recordings of families talking to each other, that in even the most enlightened families where parents both work, or it's a very big goal of both the father and the mother that they're going to share equally in the child rearing as well as the breadwinning, that they still tend to talk in a way that sets the mother up as the authority. So she noticed that there were, and Alexandra Johnston, who looked at these tapes, also noticed that there are many instances where the mother corrected the father's child-rearing behaviors, but none in which the father corrected the mother's child-rearing behaviors. The mothers were kind of gatekeepers of nutrition also. So they decided what was good for the child to eat, and the father often broke those rules, giving the child Coke, giving the child something sweet when the mother thought the child should eat something nutritious. So I wouldn't so much say that it's back to the caveman situation. As far as that goes, anthropologists who have studied hunter-gatherer societies have found now that it was actually the gathering, the vegetables, that maintained and sustained the family, and that the meat was more of ceremonial importance than it was of actually nutritional importance. But I do think that we play out these roles in these very subtle linguistic conversational ways more than we really intend to, in ways that we can control more, like decisions about who goes to work and who stays at home.
This ends Lecture 9.